Okay, here we go. So I am so happy to have Joan all the way out in California sharing with us her wisdom. I met her many, many years ago at a national storytelling conference out in Washington State. We were roommates and got to learn so much about what she does with battered women's groups and women in shelters using story. Her stories are masterfully shaped and told, and I've used a number of her follow-up suggestions and activities in my own groups, and I'm so excited. She's got a lot to share. I will let her introduce her work and take it away, Joan.
Thank you, Alisa. Thank you. I was really honored to be asked to share something on a teleconference. It's a real privilege. And my hope is to give people some information that may be helpful, possibly some inspiration to try some things on your own and in whatever situations you could possibly apply this in. So my thought was to kind of do a very mini version of a healing story session, that a typical one that I would do. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do a mini version of the exact one I did today. So I can set it up for you by saying this is a little residential drug treatment program that I've been doing healing story work in for about 14 years. So I'm as old as some of the furniture in there. And so it's small. There are typically only 6 women there. They've been court mandated. Either they shortened up their sentence by getting into the program, or they were diverted out of a program. They diverted out of a sentence and sent to this facility. If they have children that they still have custody of, they are allowed to bring the children to the house with them, which makes it an unusual program. So all the women have to meet 2 requirements. They have to have an active court case, and they have to have an active child protective services case. So imagine today I arrived, and there were only 3 women there. One was in the hospital, and 2 were at court. So there were 3 women. And I did the first thing I always do when I arrive, which is just to plop down in a chair in the living room. The other, they're seated on chairs or sofas in the living room, the little tiny living room. And I just casually say something like, "Hi, glad to be here. Let's do check-in." And most of the women are there between a minimum of 2 months, kind of average stay, 6 months, kind of long-term stay would be 18 months. So quite a range of time frames. But it means that I get to know the women pretty well over the course of time. And so when I say, "Hey, how's it been going?" we generally have already sort of a trust relationship established. And the first time I meet someone, I always say, "Hey, this is the first time I've met you. I'm going to ask the question I always meet the first time I meet someone. I always ask the first time I meet someone, and that is, tell me the story of what brought you here. How did you get to New Leaf?" And this usually leads to quite a response. Sometimes it's very simple, like my kids got taken from me and this was my only choice if I wanted to try to get them back. But often it will be much more involved. And it's a chance for them to begin to connect with their own narrative. So the check-in phase, when I first started doing healing story work, I thought the check-in was something that could be done really expeditiously and wasn't really that important. We had to get to the main topic, which was the story and the theme and the activities I had designed. But I learned over time that the check-in is vital. It's where an atmosphere of safety and trust is created. And you can take the temperature of the group. Everybody then gets on same knowledge footing. One of the women may have had a terrible experience that morning, and for her to be able to say, I'm really in a bad place, will help everybody understand what's going on through the course of the group. So check-in is important. And so we did check-in, heard from the three women, and then I told them a story, which I'll tell you an extremely, not even the Reader's Digest condensed version of it. It's sort of more like the telegram version of it. And so I'm going to tell you a story about a young woman's journey through many obstacles to recover some treasures that would change her life. So once there was a woodcutter who became so poor that he had to take his three youngest daughters to the middle of the forest and leave them there. The two older daughters started to fight as soon as the sun went down. We should try to find our way home. We should run. And the other one said, no, the wild animals will get us. And they quarreled bitterly. But the youngest, who was very clever, and her name was Molly Whoopi, said, no, we must follow the light. Well, they followed the light. They came to the door of a house. They knocked on the door. A woman answered, will you please take us in? We are lost and we are hungry. Hungry? I can't take you in. My husband's a giant. He'd as soon eat you. But the girls pleaded, and the woman took them in and sat them by the fire. Soon her husband returned, and as he stepped into the doorway, his eyes met Molly's and her eyes met his, and he chuckled. What have we here? Three lost, hungry lassies, my man, and you'll leave them alone, the wife said. She soon hurried the girls upstairs and put them in bed. She put them in bed with her own three daughters, so there were six girls in the bed. And she blew out the candle and went down the hall. Not long thereafter, the giant also came up the stairs, and he had six necklaces around his arm, three necklaces made of rough straw, three of buttery gold. He put the gold necklaces on his own daughter's necks, and the straw, the rough straw, on Molly's neck and her sister's necks. Five girls were soon asleep, but not Molly. She lay awake and wondered, what could this mean? She did not know, but she knew enough to trade the necklaces around, and it is a good thing she did. For in the middle of the night, the giant came down the hallway and with his long arm reached into the dark bedroom, feeling for those rough necklaces. He picked up those girls, not knowing they were his own daughters. And when he took them to the kitchen, by the time he lit a candle and saw they were his own girls and dropped them on the floor and raced back upstairs, well, by then, Molly and her sisters were gone, long, long gone. They had raced down the back stairs and out the back door, into the forest, and they ran and they ran and they ran, and they didn't stop running till morning. And when the sun rose, they were in front of a great palace. They went into that palace and found the king at breakfast. And the king said, when Molly had told him all that had happened, the king said, well, you have met my enemy. That giant has stolen my treasures. And if you can retrieve them for me, Molly, I will let your oldest sister marry my oldest son. Well, you have already heard that Molly was clever, so you can be sure she went back to the giant's house. She hid behind a curtain, and when he was snoring, She stood on the edge of the bed, and she tried to retrieve the golden sword, but it rattled in the scabbard, and the giant woke. And Molly ran, and the giant ran, and they ran, and they ran, until they came to the bridge of the One Hair, and Molly skipped over, because skip over she could, but the giant stayed behind, because he could not skip over. Well, as you can imagine, she went back another time, and this time she got a bag of gold, and the same thing happened. She escaped and went over the bridge. She went back a third time, and this time she got the ring off the giant's finger. And as she was creeping out, the giant woke, and they ran, and they ran, and this time he caught her. Oh, he was so angry, but Molly tricked him. She had him put her in a bag, and when the giant was out searching in the woods for a stick to beat her with, Molly tricked the giant's wife into releasing her. And although the giant returned ready with the stick lifted, Molly slid past him, and she ran and she ran. She went over the bridge of that one hair, which the giant could not go over. And she ran all the way back to the king's palace, where she married the man of her choosing and received half of the bag of gold and became the queen in due course. So that is an extremely, extremely telescope version of the story I told the women today. And then I just ask them, hey, what struck you in that story? And the first response was, well, when Molly was the queen, did she take her father and did she put him in jail? I said, but that wasn't very, clearly this woman has been listening to the story for the framework of her own life, with a father who perhaps abandoned her. And I just noted that, and I thought, well, I'll follow up on that in a bit. And I said, I have no idea what she did when she was the queen. What do you think she might have done? And it led to a wonderful conversation among all the women about what they would do, what they thought Molly would do. And then I asked them, well, what would you do if you were a queen? And they had marvelous things to say. The next comment was, I think that giant could not go over that bridge because he had to stay where he could not hurt anyone else. I said, oh, that's very interesting. Yeah, say more about that. And so then this woman went on about, she started to talk about an abusive ex and how important it was that he had been sent to jail. And so at this point, they were so busy sharing, et cetera, and it started out as a general question about the story, but they were, by now, they've heard me tell stories and they know we're getting to, that the whole point is to find their own experience in the story. But still, there was one new woman there today, and she hadn't had that experience before. So I directly prompted, after about 5 minutes of conversation, I directly prompted, so we've been talking about the story for a while. You know, think for a minute about, you know, where, if you see yourself in that story. And so at that point, the new woman who'd been somewhat quiet up to that point started talking, and she said some things roughly to the effect of, well, she had everything going against her. You know, she was left in the woods, and then, she was going to be eaten by the giant and that king. I mean, he was a coward. Why didn't he, why did he send a little girl to go back to that dangerous place? And she said, that's kind of like what my life has been like. She said, I grew up in the system, and so And so I'm listening to her just process that. And I said, yeah. I said, what do you think about how Molly was in the story? And then the woman started to say, well, you know, I'm here and I am doing everything I can to get my kids back. And I guess that's like Molly getting the treasures. And I'm going to do whatever it takes. So that was sort of the first half of my session with them. And that's usually the first, and my sessions are 2 hours every Wednesday. So generally the first half would be a check-in and a story, and then a sort of general discussion of the story, just as I described. And then we would have a break. They need to have their cigarette breaks. So they go off for 10 minutes and then they come back. And then for the second half of our time together, we usually do various kinds of activities. And so I'm going to invite you, if you have a piece of pen or paper, I'm going to invite you to do the same activity that I invited them to do. And then perhaps at the end of our conversation, when we unmute ourselves, those of you who wish can share, if you wish, some of what you wrote. But I'll give you the same activity I gave them, and then I will share what they came up with. So for the activity I asked them to do today, I told them about the concept of the 6-word story. This is a writing activity that was first of the novelist Ernest Hemingway first came up with, a famous novelist who was challenged by other writers when Hemingway said he could write a complete story in 6 words. And they said, no, you can't. And he said, yes, I can. And he proceeded to write on a napkin in the restaurant this story. For sale, period. Baby shoes, period. Never worn, period. And so the women were like very intrigued by this idea. You could write a whole story in 6 words. And then I had some other examples. 6-word stories are all, if you Google 6-word stories, you'll find out lots about them. So I gave them some examples of 6-word stories. Had twins, then had an abortion. Got expelled, felt like a loser. Skinny girl in a fat body. Parents divorced. Have no home. The razor never loved me back. So I just gave them those examples and then I asked if they had any questions. And then for them, I'll give you a different exercise, but for them, I said, reflect back on your life before you entered into recovery. And write as many 6-word stories as you can in the next 10 minutes. And I handed out slips of construction paper, color strips of construction paper. And I said, as many as you can, just challenge yourself, as many 6-word stories of your life while you were still in addiction. And put the slips in a basket. And I'm going to I told them I'm going to stir things around in the basket, and then I'm going to read them. They'll be anonymous. I'll read them out loud. It'll be a collective poem. And if you don't want your stories read, you don't have to put them in the basket. But if you put them in the basket, I'm going to anonymously read what's in there. So I'm going to say, why don't you all take, like, just not 15 minutes, why don't you all take 2 minutes, and why don't you write a 6-word story of a period in your life, a 6-word story about one period in your life. It can be happy, can be recent, can be the far past, just a 6-word story. I'll just give you 1 minute to do that. And so then for the women, after they finished that and they had put all their slips in the basket, everybody wanted to put them in the basket, I said, now I'm going to give you 5 minutes to, and I brought out more brightly colored slips of paper. I'm going to invite you to write as many 6-word stories as you can about how you are right now, you know, and what recovery is like for you. And I do that because for me, it is very, very important to never leave a group on a negative note, and not even to leave them in the negative for terribly long. The women I work with in the shelters and in this place are traumatized, and they're very well aware of all the pain and suffering in their lives, and they don't need to spend a lot of extra time there. I mean, I believe that's one reason I am so devoted to the traditional story, and I don't tell cautionary tales. But I tell traditional stories that have a through line, that there's pain, there's trauma, there's trouble, but the through line is to fulfillment and wholeness. And this is the medicine of the traditional story, especially for people whose lives are chaotic, who may never have known structure, who may never have really heard a lot of positive input. The stories over time start to help them internalize a structure and internalize the possibility of a future past their immediate difficulties. So I always try to do that in every healing story session. That's why we went on to the next, you know, now some 6-word stories about your life in recovery and beyond. So I'll just read you a few of I'll read you some of those from today. 6-word stories from the women at New Leaf, September 21st, 2016. Spent money on dope, no Christmas. X waiting outside with bag and pipe. My kids saw me in cuts. Ran the streets, lost it all. Hit bottom when kids got taken. Crank or weed, nothing else mattered. No life. spent time getting high. Oh, so then lost my kids, lost my mind. I've been bad. Now it ends. No life. Spent time getting high. Then the second set. Fought hard for kids. Won life. Did the next right thing. Staying free. Started getting better. Started feeling better. I wasn't happy. Now I am. I want a future with no limits. I love living my life again. Working hard on self, great rewards. New life, new attitude, new me. I am able to breathe healthy again. Happiness happens no matter when. Clear my thoughts, clear my mind. Love self, love life, love everything. So, yeah. So those were then, that was, so those, so I read them out loud, their, what they had put in the basket. And then I asked, what did it feel like to hear this poem you've written of all your experiences gathered together into a single poem? And they talked about how good it made them feel, even hearing the bad things, they said. You know, they felt increased solidarity as a group. They felt, you know, they could acknowledge, release some of the pain, the shame, and could honestly believe that they were moving into a future. And the poem really sort of help them hear that and see that. So then I always close a group by asking, you know, going around the room and saying, you know, what was most meaningful for you in the group today? You know, what moment, what insight? I mean, what do you want to remember out of group today? And I find I'm often very surprised by what it is that they remember and take away. So I'm trying to remember what they said today. It was a very small group because they're only the three women. I can't actually remember what each of them said. One talked about she realizes she's much better off than she was and that she's really come a long way. I remember a very thin young woman whose baby is in CPS said that she's come a long way and she's got hope. There's one woman who's going to be induced tomorrow morning at 5:30 a.m. to have her baby. And I can't actually remember what they said at the end of group. But, so I think I'm going to just close my part of it and open it up for discussion or questions with a Rachel Naomi Remen quote that I really love, and I think it is part of what we do and can do in a healing story session. Rachel Naomi Remen said, "Our listening creates a sanctuary for the homeless parts within another person. Our listening creates a sanctuary for the homeless parts within another person. And I think that story work for me, the story gives the people, the listeners, a chance to listen to their own lives through another framework. And then the facilitator's deep, non-judgmental listening does, in fact, I think, create that sanctuary for healing. So I think healing story work is probably, for me, more even about listening, much more about listening than it is about telling. I mean, the telling, in a two-hour session, my telling is 20 minutes maximum. Most of it is finding ways to create opportunities for the women, in my case, the women I work with, to listen to their own lives, listen to their own stories, listen to each other's stories, and to be gently oriented towards listening for hopeful possibilities for growth and healing. So I think that's probably enough for me directly. You can, if you have a question or a comment, please unmute yourself.
Great. Why don't we keep muted, and except if you'd like to ask a question, then press *6 and unmute yourselves one at a time. That will keep it quieter.
Okay? Yes, and if you also would like to share your the story you wrote and what that experience, what you noticed as you wrote that experience, that would be very welcome too. So,
great. I want to say thank you, Joan. This is so valuable. I love how personally you made it, and how you just took us right into your day today and shared exactly the responses of these women and how well you listened to them. And I'll let other people speak, but I just want to thank you for your wise way of being.
Oh, well, thank you. Oh, and I also want to say, I took two of my old faithful story sessions. I have all on a handout that I can maybe send and have posted on the website, or if you email me, I can email it to you. We can work out the details on that. But those two bulletproof sessions.
That would be great. We can put them out on the listserv. That might be the easiest thing.
Okay. Maybe I'll just post it to the listserv. Okay. Great.
Excellent. Thank you.
Right. You're welcome.
Who else would have a question or a comment for Joan?
Joan, this is Beck Stockbridge, and I'm just unbelievably moved by your description of these women and what they're going through, and the way they communicated what they're going through in their stories. And when I was writing my stories, they were positive and supporting. And I'm not even going to read it because it would take away from the beauty and the harshness that these women are going through. And you know, you've come up with a way of helping these women when the reality of their situation, you know, let's face it, I mean, even if the best thing that could happen happened, they're still not in a good place. And
good
to
place
step
relative.
Into that realm. I admire your courage in order to reach out and helping these people. Nice work.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you. Yeah. Well, I always feel enriched as I walk away. It's true. I always feel to be trusted to have people share their lives is a real privilege. So I always feel I'm a beneficiary of this as well.
I'm sure there are more comments out there and stories, but since it's quiet, this is Elisa, I'll say one more thing or ask something, and that is that you first let them check in, which is so important and lovely because I think it lets them, sounds like, sort of discharge a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
But it also sounds like you don't get caught up in whatever that was. Your goal is to give them something different to then, you know, look at their lives in the bigger picture.
Yes, we have. I go over with the groups. We have very clear protocols about that. That at check-in, what this is what I call contemplative listening or deep listening. And there's nobody comments on anybody else's check-in and not even asks questions. It's just a place to hear how someone is right now. And it, you know, I could say it's doing groups over time. They really learn the ropes, you might say. They create an etiquette. They create a culture. And I am not a trained therapist, as I tell them. I am not a trained therapist. I'm not there to do therapy. I'm there to facilitate a healing story process. So, the listening is really important in the check-in and not getting into it. We don't do any problem solving.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and they accept that they can go somewhere else with you because they've done it before.
But I could say also that I have started not using approaches in this depth, but I have started even in public performance settings, started using storytelling opportunities as ways of creating connection and letting listeners look for enhanced meaning. Like, so in very, very simple ways, like, at a school telling recently, I just asked all the kids to turn to their neighbor and share. It was a story about happiness, a beautiful Siberian story, how happiness came. And I asked them to share with their neighbors some things that made them happy. And then the kids shouted out, you know, I asked them, you know, what makes you happy? And we started to make lists on the board, what makes you happy? So every setting now, I kind of try to look for, you know, very simple ways of involving the audience and listeners. Obviously, nothing in this depth and nothing in this intensity, but sharing with your neighbor, raising your hand if you've ever, you know, whatever, or word association. Audience will play word association with you. Association, words associated with home, words associated with adventure. You know, it's just ways of getting audiences engaged because I think that's healing for the people involved and creates community and creates bonding and then, you know, it enhances the possibility of story to bring life, I think. So I look for all sorts of opportunities to do it.
Others, questions out there? Hmm.
Joan, I've got a question. Have you ever had women repeat and show back up in the center and share with you their feedback on what worked and what didn't work?
Yeah, I have. I have. I by now have had quite a few times was after a short or a long period, people have relapsed and come back to the program. And very often when they see me, you know, one woman came, realized 13 years later she came back into the program. And she could still tell me the first story she heard me tell and what it had meant to her. So, you know, yeah, so I do get feedback. I also tell in a homeless shelter in Sacramento, and every year they have a gala, and they invite all the graduates to come back to the gala. And so I see graduates at the gala, and many of them come up to me and talk about the stories and how they tell this. Now they tell the stories to their children, or you know, some, you know. So I do get feedback, and I'm surprised. Of course, the ones that talk to me are the ones who the stories have stayed with. But there's a surprising number of them that the stories stick with them. Yeah, so.
Great.
All right.
Anybody else? I know their people are on there because I haven't heard them ding away.
Be brave. Be brave.
I have a question.
Sure.
How important is movement?
I would like to incorporate more movement. Many of the women are somewhat physically challenged. In the residential program, many of them are pregnant, very pregnant. And there's a lot of physical pain with the people in the groups. So I have sometimes put in little segments that are more like some seated yoga postures, or I've done some breathing work with them and stuff like that. But I think movement would be very good to incorporate more movement. Sometimes I have them enact scenes from the stories, and then they get up and so sometimes I do some of that. Do you have some experience with that or some?
Well, this is your niece, Ellen, so yes.
Oh, hi, Ellen. Yeah.
Hi.
Oh, hi. Yeah. We do movement sometimes. Yeah. More would be better.
Well, you're such a wealth.
Well, I also could, if you would like, describe the two briefly, give a little background on the two story sessions that I'll be putting on the Healing Story Alliance. One is the Japanese myth of Amaterasu and Susanoo.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably been my most long-standing story I use in these settings, and it is powerful and works very well. The two activities are to write a poem on stem lines, and the other is to do a mirror exercise of other people in the group reflecting positive attributes back to you. And so that session will be online. And the other one is a Scottish story, The Stolen Child. And themes in there are recovering whatever is most precious that has been taken from you. which it could be your self-esteem, your self-worth, or for some of the women I work with, their biological children, but I open it up past that as a metaphor, so. And we do a lot of little activities about loss and recovery in that, that story.
Yeah. What a lot of losses they've had.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but the point is that as the hero's journey tells us, the losses are almost a starting point.
Yeah.
Right? It's what goes on after that. That's I say, think of yourself. You are the hero of your own life. Set your feet on your hero's journey. And, the women seem to greatly relish hearing that. It's not. It's a message that has been seldom heard by them. And it's powerful.
Yeah. Anybody else have a question? Okay, well, I'm going to remind everybody that...
Hello?
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I had a question. Can you say anything about the way that the traditional story, which it sounds like it's often a fairy tale, how the metaphors in that story plays off against the real life stories that the participants are telling.
Yeah, I think the metaphors are extremely important, and they are often how I structure the follow-up activities. So, for example, in today's story, the three items that Molly Whoopi recovered were a sword, a bag of gold, and the signet ring. So I asked the women, I said, now, everything in the story is a symbol, and, it's part of you, it's within you. And what do you think a sword could represent? And so they all quickly, came to the idea of strength. And so we talked about how do you lose your strength? How does strength get taken from you? Then we moved on to the bag of gold, which and then the signet ring as authority and self-control, I work with the metaphors very directly. And, does that answer your question?
Just a comment on that. I think metaphors are very powerful because it leaves a lot open for interpretation, where if you would have told a real story, that's kind of restricted to the reality of what happened in that story. So
yeah.
I can really see the reason for using metaphors. When we do drama therapy, we use a lot of metaphors as well because it creates distance between the person and what's happening, and it causes the person to be safe, to share.
Yeah.
Yes.
So always in the conversation first, we always start, I think of it as the veil of the story. Like, I didn't ask to say, but many days, what do you think was going on for Molly and her sisters alone in the forest? They're talking about Molly and her sisters on the surface. Underneath, of course, it's all their own experiences and projections. But the story is a safe veil. You can talk about it as a story, and I'm sensing the room and how are things, and when I ask a little bit follow-up, so do you see yourself in this story? You know, or where do you see yourself in this story? They have started to open it up through the metaphor, the veil of the story, and then later, to the extent that they are ready, willing, and able, they can directly share their own life and experience.
Yeah, so I can also hear it's like a gradual process of, you know, like you say, you start with a check-in and gradually gets into the warmer water or deeper.
Yeah.
Other people are ready to share. It's like, that makes a lot of sense. I was wondering if I could share my six-letter story, my six-word story.
Oh, please.
I wrote, went to China, became a foreigner.
Could you say that again, please? I didn't quite catch it.
No, sure. Went to China, became a foreigner.
Okay. Went to China, became a foreigner. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Did you like the six-word format?
Yes, I liked it a lot. And it was interesting to encapsulate actually a huge experience of a loss of belonging. You know, that's kind of what I got from that. And I hadn't thought about it like that before, but it's very powerful because it allows a person to get to the essence of an experience.
Yeah. I do a lot of very distilled stuff like that. Because it does help focus down to something. Or I often ask people to respond with a word or phrase.
Uh-huh.
Or this kind. The six-word story is a useful thing to have in your back pocket. You can pull it out anytime. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. All right. Anyone else? Any other six-word stories or final comments?
I would say thank you so much.
And my pleasure.
We really have been blessed. And I know we'll hear more from you as our regular supporter of Healing Story Alliance. And I found a date for the next teleconference with Sydney Solis, which is October 19th. We really hope you'll check the website and join us again in a month. So,
okay.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much, Joan.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks. All right.
You're going to put those links on the listserv.
Well, yeah, maybe I'll put it in as a I'll take my Word document and copy it, cut and paste it, and send it in as a listserv.
Yeah, I can remind people that if they didn't get to get on the call, that within at least a couple of weeks, it will be up on the site for them to listen to as well.
Okay.
But I'll let people know when it's up on the site. It takes a week or so. You can add that in. Okay.
That will be up on the site, and they'll be notified when it's up on the site.
Yes.
Okay.
Right, that was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lisa. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Take care.
You too. Night. Bye. Night.